Thank you, John. So I guess my job is to grow the already large challenge that that Tony has outlined to include some other factors. And of course, this is a huge topic, and so the best we can hope to do in the next 25 minutes or so is to scratch the surface. So let's go ahead and start scratching, if you will. Perhaps the point to start is to recognize that the goals in this title are really the goals or pillars that the UN defines for sustainability. So we look at the environmental pillar that involves water and air quality, et cetera, the economic pillar of profitability, risk, cash flow, marketing credit, et cetera, and then the social goal that deals with society's general needs as well as things like working conditions, culture, and that sort. And so sustainable crop and nutrient management must really support cropping systems that contribute to all three of those pillars in a really non-negotiable way, if the system, if the approach, if the future is indeed one that we can continue on indefinitely. Now, I think for our purposes today, we ought to take that Venn diagram and modify it just a little bit. And what I would suggest we need to do today is to push those circles a little closer together, and so that we can, in our mind's eye anyway, see a triangle of overlap. And I would suggest then that this topic is really addressing that triangle. Does it exist? And if it does exist, how do we move our programs inside that sweet triangle in the middle? And from here, I'd like to go to Bill Gates's keynote opening lecture at the World Food Prize meeting. He gave what apparently I wasn't there to hear it myself, but from the published transcript, it looks like he made a pretty impressive talk for a non-agriculturalist, if you would say, could call him that. Here's what he said. He said, this global effort to help small farmers is endangered by an ideological wedge that threatens to split the movement in two. On one side is a technological approach that increases productivity. On the other side is an environmental approach that promotes sustainability. Productivity or sustainability, they say you have to choose, but it's a false choice, and it's dangerous for the field. I think Mr. Gates really got it right here, but I'd like to take and expand on the comment about an ideological wedge, and I think this is a critical point for us this week, that this is also a disciplinary wedge as we look at how so often in the past we've stayed in our own silos rather than looking across disciplines, which is where a lot of the advances are going to have to take. And I think that's part of the message that I just heard from Tony as well, is that we need to work across disciplines. And when we get into this area of balancing these three pillars, these three goals, that even becomes much, much more critical. And it goes beyond individuals to groups, beyond disciplines, to many disciplines of science. I guess I'd suggest that a primary sustainability objective for agronomic science and practice to move us in that direction would be to get in our heads that we really do need to contribute all we can to improving global productivity and efficiency, but to see those two really as one entity. Because globalization has, in fact, merged those two objectives into one. Due to the strong global character of demand of agricultural products and really many of the critical environmental issues, improving efficiency without improving productivity increases pressure to produce more on other lands. The other side of the coin, squandering resources to maximize productivity puts more pressure on other lands to reduce environmental impact. So you look at them really as one thing. Now, is this the same as obtaining balance? I don't know. I see this balance concept as a bit problematic, and because what appears in my mind is this fulcrum of nutrient management, where out on one end you have productivity, and the other end you have efficiency, and so it gives you right away the impression that if you make progress with one, you lose on the other. And I don't think it really needs to be that way. If we can picture those two again, as I'm suggesting in this metaphor. If we can picture them as one thing in our work as individuals, I think we can make progress perhaps faster. Now, that said, As yields climb, more nutrients are contained in removed crops. Potentially more nutrients are necessary to replace those removed. More nutrients are at risk then of being lost to the environment. So the challenge of increasing productivity, as Tony talked to us about, and NUE, in fact, increases. Development and adoption of nutrient BMPs becomes more important. Adoption of efficiency-enhancing technologies plays a larger role. So what you see pictured there all become more important. And you'll notice some of those are high-tech tools, and others are very simple, logic-based, handheld kinds of tools that fit in any part of the world, in any particular culture. Now, some of you have seen this diagram several times before. Others may not have. It comes at the result of efforts by a number of groups, including the International Fertilizer Industry Association, IPNI, TFI, a number of discussions with university scientists in trying to come up with a global framework for nutrient stewardship. And let me walk you through it just briefly, because I think it eventually has a message that can be a very helpful message. You see in the center of this diagram what we refer to as the four R's: application of the right nutrient source at the right rate, right time, and right place. And you see that you've got that center, but then on the outside you have our sustainability pillars, and you see that the four R's really eventually in the field mean best management practices. So there's nothing very striking, nothing very new there. It's just trying to implement best management practice as defined by science. Now, a critical part of this is, I think, and this gets back to getting out of silos again, is that if we're going to make progress with attaining these goals simultaneously, we have to, of course, recognize that nutrient management occurs within a cropping system. And indeed, the managers of that system don't so much manage with nutrient objectives in mind, they manage with cropping system objectives in mind that deal with things like productivity, profitability, environmental impact, and durability, where we look to the future. Is this a durable kind of approach? Can it be continued on into the future? And then we get to the most challenging part of this framework. And that has to do with these performance indicators. And this really, to me, gets right at the meat of this issue of balance, is that recognizing, even if we are focusing just on nutrient use efficiency, if we do that and ignore all these other various performance indicators, nutrient loss, water and air quality, soil productivity, farm income, working conditions, return on investment, yield, etc., we're probably not going to move the system along in the right direction. To have balance, you really do need a balanced set of performance indicators, and that is not an easy thing to do. But keeping a diagram like this in our mind or maybe next to our computer, I think, can help individuals working on one or more indicators remain cognizant of other important indicators as we move along. An example of the problem we can get into. Let's say, and we're going to have some presentations later in this session on nitrous oxide emission reduction. All right, so if that's the dragon we're going to slay, if that's our passion, is to really go out and kill this N2O dragon to save the world from climate change, and in the process, we make changes in the system that cause yield loss, that cause a reduction in water use efficiency, or enhance soil erosion, have we really moved the system along in the right direction? Again, it comes back to this concept of balance, or maybe seeing a goal that is a bit more complex goal than what we have in the past. I want to go back to that objective that I mentioned earlier that I think is a good one for agronomy really as a whole, and that is to contribute all we can to improving productivity and resource use efficiency, and that "and" is critical. Sustainably meeting this objective will require close cooperation across scales, disciplines, sectors, and geographies. And so if you look in that top left there, there's one scale, molecular biology, nanoscience, if you will, and you look all the way through those other diagrams up to the global scale, and then you think of global issues and you work all your way back down through those other scales back into the world of molecular biology. There are parts of the solution at all those various scales, and it's only recognizing that it's the total that it's going to accomplish what Tony was talking about, as well as accomplish the environmental and social objectives, that we're probably going to make progress. Well, I would suggest that there are major roles in all of this for research, education, and policy. And let me start with the one that I know essentially nothing about, and that's policy. What is the role of policy? Well, again, as an agronomist, I see the role of policy as one that just simply doesn't make things worse, all right? If we've got something that's working, don't create a policy that's going to get in the way. And we've already seen one, and it kind of an indication of something that is at least in part working. Tony showed you this graph. This is a little updated. It's got some estimates out through 2009, but it shows the same picture. And remember now that while we were increasing partial factor productivity for N on corn, we were also increasing productivity substantially. Now, some data that Cliff Snyder just pulled together for a meeting in Costa Rica coming up next month, or actually this month, is shown here. And it takes that partial factor productivity and correlates it, if you look at the y-axis, flux of total N to the Gulf. Now, this is indeed a correlation, and it does not establish cause and effect, but what you have here is a situation where what's happening over time, we have productivity increasing, we have efficiency increasing, at least that one indicator of efficiency, and we've got loss via a critical mechanism going down. That seems like we're moving in the right direction. Are we moving fast enough? Some could argue, well, no, we need to accelerate, but we would hope that policy would accelerate that positive change, not get in the way. Here's another issue I'll bring up with you. These are some data from our Dale Halverson, ARS, out of Fort Collins. He's been looking at nitrogen source selection as a way of reducing N2O loss, and it's actually demonstrated here on a couple years of data, 20 to 50% reduction in loss possible by source selection. Now, the question I'll ask, is this important? And I'll ask you to look at what's on the y-axis and look at the scale. Now, Ardell just a few minutes ago was showing me some of his 2009 data that shows somewhat greater losses across all the sources. And so whether we're talking a half a kilogram of N or 1 kilogram of N or 2 kilograms of N, is that important if you're only thinking agronomy or economics? I don't think so. I mean, no one's going to get very excited about a kilogram or a pound of N. But is this a role then for policy? To support decisions that would move in this direction, even though the agronomics or economics doesn't necessarily, in this particular irrigated continuous corn situation in Colorado, look like it's going to make a lot of difference for this one loss mechanism. Is that a role for policy? Perhaps. Here's a statement that also gets me into trouble at times when I'm talking to policymakers or influencers, and that is, average is the enemy of efficient and effective end management. Because this does complicate things a bit. And what this does is it leads us to something called adaptive management. And you can look at this in a lot of different ways, but as I introduce myself to thinking about adaptive management, it comes to mind that scientific truths are seldom permanent, but do in fact change as scientific knowledge grows. And so BMPs are dynamic and evolve as science and technology expands opportunity. That's what we're doing this week, is trying to expand opportunity. And then as we go back home, practical experience teaches the astute observer what works under local conditions and what in fact does not work under local conditions. Then adaptive management transforms a generally good practice to best practices based on local practical experience. That's how I see adaptive management working. Schematically, we could look at it something like this, where you have a number of site factors. And you can see they're rather diverse. All of those come into this nutrient management decision-making process. And in fact, they can serve as input into some sort of a decision support device. It may be very complex, as in a sophisticated computer program. It could be a very simple, paper-driven kind of a process of trying to come to a recommendation. And then, ideally, that involves stakeholder input as well. We're doing a little better job of that now than we have in the past, but perhaps we need to do much more. And so you get some kind of an output from that box, an output for recommendations, output or recommendation for source, rate, time, and place. A decision gets made, an action takes place, generates an outcome related to productivity, profitability, durability, environmental impact, or nutrient use efficiency. That's kind of intertwined there somehow. And so we then, through a feedback loop in an adaptive management system, end up going back into that box, changing how we made last year's decision and maybe making a bit better one the following year. Now, that seems to be a system that does, in fact, get us closer and closer to a better and better system as time passes, and I would argue that policy should facilitate this cycle and certainly not freeze it. Okay, on to education. Integration and communication, key things. I visited Washington State University last week, and I was very impressed with a program that I think is a great example of education for the future. It's called NSPIRE. I kind of like that, NSPIRE. It's an acronym standing for Nitrogen Systems Policy-Oriented Integrated Research and Education. It's a project funded through NSF. It's a research training grant, basically. And they have as a goal in the training program the following: to produce graduates who have a broad and rigorous training in N cycling, who seamlessly integrate nitrogen cycle science for effective communication with public policymakers. Do we need that? I think we do. I think we need a lot of people that can accomplish that. Now, that is a big goal there, and I was sort of teasing Dr. Pan a bit. He says, okay, you've got a good goal, and they've got some brilliant students there that look very promising, and they've got a process that looks like it has the potential to work, and now we'll watch to see if it works. But this is the kind of integrated educational effort, I think, that is moving us in the right direction. So on to research. Again, the word integration comes up. Tony mentioned that in his presentation, and it comes up in a bit broader setting here. Integration, cooperation, and sharing. Here I want to go to a couple of reports. The first one is a report from the IAASTD group, co-sponsored by several UN organizations, World Bank, WHO. They make the following statement: the main challenge is to increase the productivity of agriculture in a sustainable manner. Okay, that's really what we're talking about here. And they identified six high-priority natural resource management options. I'm going to share two of those with you. First one was to develop networks of knowledge, science, and technology practitioners for the collective good. Secondly, to connect globalization and localization pathways that link locally generated knowledge and innovations to public and private agriculture knowledge, science, and technology. All right, we'll think about that for a while. And while we're doing, let's go on to another quote. This comes from Nina Fedoroff with USAID in her plenary lecture to the AAAS group at their annual meeting a year ago. With respect to increasing productivity, she says, research, universities, and institutes working together with the business sector and using contemporary electronic resources have a unique opportunity to accelerate the flattening of the world. Of course, there's that word that you see a lot these days, and it does go back to Friedman's first book, where he talks about the errors of globalization, including the current one, Globalization 3, where he says the change agent is the individual with the power to collaborate and compete globally, enabled by fiber optics and software. And it's basically the concept that allows a soil testing lab in the Midwest U.S. to do its data management programming in Bangalore. That's not hypothetical. That is going on. It's been going on for a number of years here in the U.S. Now, the question is there an opportunity to flatten the world of nutrient management research? I think there is. And we're going to go to the nanoscience area as an example for this. This is called the Nano Hub. Some of you may be familiar with it, some of you may not. It looks like a website, but it's really pretty amazing, and it seems to be a lot more than a website. It indeed provides web access to the tools scientists need in nanoscience to collaborate on modeling, research, and educational efforts. So you have to see what's going on here. You have multiple audiences, multiple groups coming to this location. Some are modelers. Some are people that generate neat data sets. Others are people that come to the website with the concept of taking data set A and model B and trying to solve a new problem or find a new solution to an old problem. And some are educators looking for ways to teach the principles of science. So it provides web access to the tools scientists need to collaborate on modeling research and educational efforts. Now, the question I would ask is, do we need a neutral hub? A global plant nutrition research and extension community. That's not my idea. That comes from Purdue Agronomy and some other departments across the campus at Purdue. I think it's a great concept. And one of the elements of this, or potential elements, is what you see here. And this comes from a proposal Scott Morrell built for us a year ago, where you have site year data coming in from diverse locations around the world, perhaps, or around a state or around a country, whatever the case might be, along with the metadata, high quality, highly structured data that comes into some sort of collaborative mechanism that is curated over time. So, and what that means, of course, is that 10 years from now, as electronic access, electronic technology changes, we can still go back and pick up today's data. It's not lost because now we're doing USB drives instead of whatever we used to do, the CD thing, or looking on into the future. So it's a curated collection, maintains quality, access over time. Some upscaling mechanisms, typically models, decision support tools, et cetera, that out through extension then gets the process of decision support completed back out to a range of production settings that are specific for domains that have to do with the nature of the beginning data. And so is this a new concept? Is this something different for us to think about? Usually when someone first is encountered, they say, well, that's crazy. Because what does it do? Well, it does not look at the products of research as being journal articles. Instead, it is actually the data set. It's the data set that's the legitimate product that sits on the library shelf. Remember what Tony was talking about all those issues that where multiple groups have to come together just to deal with building a better corn plant. Well, would it be more powerful to be able to take someone's highly structured, high-quality data set, and now you've got a new idea, or you're working over here, in this case, now on an environmental issue. Wouldn't it be neat to take that data set and bring them together via whatever models or tools you have at your disposal at that particular point in time to create something new from what is there? Would that be better than trying to do it with a published article? Now, some are going to say, that's crazy. But I think it's something we ought to think about. And other groups that have a lot more prestige and wisdom than I do have suggested the same thing. We can look at the National Academy of Sciences. They publish a little book for beginning scientists. And in that book, they state researchers have a responsibility to devise ways to share their data in the best ways possible. Repositories of astronomical images, protein sequences, archaeological data, cell lines, reagents, transgenic animals, etc. All right? Are there nutrient management data sets that we ought to be adding to that list? That's the question I want to raise to you. Okay, one last example, and then we'll close her off with some summary statements. NEON. NEON is an acronym that stands for the National Ecological Observatory Network. It's a continental scale research platform. Some of you that read science probably read this article earlier in 2009 that talked about NEON. Let's just look at a quote here. It was written in that article that ecologists will use a distributed network of sensors linked by advanced cyber infrastructure to predict responses of the biosphere to changes in land use, invasive species, and climate over the next 30 to 50 years. That adds a zero, adds a decimal to what we normally think about, isn't it? We're doing great if we talk 3 to 5 years in the future. Now, this is 30 to 50 years. This is to become the ecologist's Hubble telescope. Funded by NSF, 60 sites across the U.S. will contribute data sets to encourage best practices to solve environmental challenges. Planning took a decade, hundreds of ecologists collaborating. And so, is there a NEON, a Hubble telescope for nutrient management? What should we be starting today that 40 years from now, people are going to say, oh, I'm sure glad we've got this information. I'm sure we have these long-term data to solve these problems, to make progress on Tony's issues, as well as the societal issues, as well as the environmental issues that are critical to moving us ahead. So, back to the title. balancing economic, environmental, and social goals in nutrient management. Viewing the improvement of productivity and efficiency as a singular nutrient management objective may be useful in balancing these goals. Maybe that's a better thing than trying to talk about balance. Just say, all right, this is what we're going to do. It's one thing. We're going to move both of these up, treat them as one thing. Accomplishing this objective will demand close cooperation and understanding among scales, disciplines, geographies, and sectors. The 4R nutrient stewardship framework that we talked about earlier, I think, including its numerous system performance indicators, can help connect specific practices to balanced sets of performance indicators, and perhaps more importantly, teach us all that we need to work with other disciplines. We need to look for help in order to really move ahead in this concept of economic, environmental, and social goal accomplishment. And balance among these goals can likely be advanced through research that produces high-quality, publicly available data sets, education that seamlessly integrates all aspects of nutrient science for policy practice and communication to the public, and policy that facilitates adoption of effective practices and enables new ones while allowing for site-specific adaptive management. So, the challenge is huge. And the meetings that we're having this week are key to meeting this challenge. So, with that, I thank you again for the invitation to participate in the symposium. I look forward to the rest of the talks that will actually get down to practical solutions. So, thank you. Thank you for those two questions. Let's go back to the first one. You remember that the nutrient management, the extremely simple concept of right source at the right rate, time, and place, that was inside that cropping system circle. And so all the things that you're talking about, and they are so important, they are part, I mean, the nutrient management concept, the nutrient management practices are part of that cropping system. And so the interactions that you're talking about are so critical. If you have a lousy stand, there's no way you're going to get efficient use of nitrogen. I mean, that's very simple. If you've got disease problems that are not controlled in this system where we're growing many of the same species right there in that enclosure, which is not a natural setting by any stretch. If we don't recognize the challenges in pest management that are part of that system, it's not going to work. And so, yeah, your point is well made, and I apologize for not making that clearer when I showed that framework. But that's the whole part of that cropping system circle that encompasses the 4 R's. Then your second question on the partial factor productivity, I'm glad you were looking at that carefully. What I think has happened there is if you go back to that point where it appeared that inefficiency was high and similar actually to what we're just now getting back to, it's a little misleading, and it's misleading because what we're doing at that point in time across the Corn Belt is we're mining soil nitrogen like crazy. And so it was giving us, at least in part, the pseudo elevated efficiency when that we got because during that period, organic N was declining, and so it gave you the false impression that we were getting a lot of corn per unit of fertilizer in a plant. I can see you're not agreeing with me. Well, what do you think?
It's just basically, in my experience from other parts of the world, it's a misuse of nitrogen farmers have. They don't have information, right information, so they are using more than what is required. So I call it misuse, and that's what is depicted in your partial factor productivity.
That's what was,
to do with the soil nitrogen mining.
But isn't
soil nitrogen more or less remains in equilibrium, actually.
Not across our corn belt. Our mollisols lost a tremendous amount of organic carbon and a tremendous amount of N during those years. But what you're saying, I think, is where we were when we were down at the bottom of that curve. I think that's what was happening there. I mean, that was about at the time of the Green Revolution, and we had this exuberant attitude about producing as much as we can to feed the world, and we used more N than we needed to at that point. So, you know, I think maybe we're just shifted down to that bottom area.